that, you know, because I know as parents that we make mistakes, and I've always practiced this, and I think that...
We'll find out what she thinks in just a moment. Welcome to a Friday. We're talking about teenagers again. We did last week. We thought I'd give you a whole week to rest before we come back talk about teenagers. You know what? I'll tell you what. If you're a parent of a teen or several teenagers, I think it'd be an exciting time. I really can. I mean, I look back on raising our teens with my wife, Donna, and seeing all the changes they're going through and identity issues and figuring out their life and their values and where they want to go in life. You always look back with some, I should have or could have done this and done things differently, but you know what? It can be an exciting time. Maybe you're in the midst of it right now. We have some encouragement for you. We got a whole bunch of people ready to share comments. We got some questions coming up. You're welcome to share your questions or comments on our storyline today. We have our callers lined up already. You can call 888-888-1717 to do that, okay? We'd love to hear from you. All right, let's get to the rest of Ruth to hear what she was trying to say to us. Take a listen.
I think it's imperative that, you know, because I know as a parent that we make mistakes, and I've always practiced this, and I think that we should apologize when we're wrong to our kids. And I think that stands as a better example of being really sorry or remorseful for something than telling kids they need to say, I'm sorry, or, you know, you should apologize for that. But, you know, set the example and be what you want your kids to be.
I agree. You know, learning to humble ourselves when we make a mistake with our kids and say, I'm sorry, is an important thing. Sometimes, though, man, you get a teenage challenge like Kathleen has here, and you don't know where to turn. Take a listen.
Well, I have a 20-year-old son, and my husband passed away a couple of years ago from cancer. And he is now in a relationship with an atheist female. I believe she's just trying to test the waters with me a bit, but we went on a day trip to Flagstaff, and I was in the back seat, and the two of them, of course, were in the front. And she made a comment on the way up about, do I have to live near Sky Daddy? And I said, I'm not real sure what that means. And she said, well, do you have to live by a church? Do you have to be by religious people? And I said, well, I enjoy the fellowship that I have with the church I belong to and the people that I'm surrounded by. And my son's a believer as well. So I made eye contact with my son in the rearview mirror, and I felt like he wanted me to just let it go. So I let it go. And then there was a family gathering at my brother's, and I was asked, do you think that she's the one that Matthew should marry? And I said, no. I never elaborated. I never said anything further about her. I just said, no, I don't believe she's the one. And now my son and I haven't spoken in over 6 months.
Mm-hmm. You know, Kathleen, thank you for sharing your pain with us. And I don't really know there was a question as much as just sharing the pain that you have. And I would say to parents, when you have a teenager, and they're at this, in this case, a 20-year-old, but making a decision that maybe you don't agree with, ask for permission. Say, honey, I love you more than anything. Is it okay? Can I share with you what I'm observing? Because I love you. This is about you. With no criticism of the other person. Just, you know, your son, if he claims to be, if he says he's a believer, he's heading down the wrong path. Not because he's better than this girl or you're better than this girl, but simply, we're not equally yoked. We don't have the same value. It will blow up or potentially blow up in both of their faces after they go further down the road if he's genuinely a follower of Christ. And secondly, I think we've got to be careful never to put our kids in a position where they have to pick between something else or someone else and us. Because the question really isn't between that as much as, son, this is between you and God. If you're a follower of Christ, you got to make a decision. You're either going to be true to what the Bible teaches or not. And either way, I'm going to love you, but I'm concerned for you, and I love you, and I want the best. You know that. And then I think a third thing is being really careful when we share with others. That becomes gossip, and that comes around and will bite you big time on the backside. And so sometimes we just got to keep our mouth shut and be careful when we get on the prayer chain. You know, I appreciate the prayer chain, but sometimes the chain gets out of hand. And we get people praying, and sometimes that can create a problem for a personal issue for a person. And so we got to use good judgment with that. So Kathleen, thank you for sharing your pain. Pray for your son. Do what you can to get that door back open to maintain a relationship with him, and maybe with this young lady. Maybe you want to go one-on-one, take her to lunch, have a connection with her, and just talk to her about yourself without being preachy or using Christianese, you know, which we're good at. Okay, thank you, Kathleen. We're talking about teens today. Some of you really struggle. I want you to take a listen before the break here, because this is a reality, what goes on in far too many homes today. Take a listen.
I have a 15-year-old stepson. We have three older girls and then one younger girl, a blended family. And we have illicit drug use among the 15-year-old. He's been arrested 10 times at least, has slipped out of his ankle bracelet, currently doing it, using drugs, and does not go to school. As a step-parent, it's very hard to say anything about it, even for his natural sister to say anything to my wife about it. She is very upset. He is currently living with his dad. He's been there for about a year now. His dad runs a good tight ship as well. Obviously, as a parent, you don't want your child to get in trouble when they do things. You don't want to call the police on them, but until you have to. But what we're dealing with now is the judge here has let him go on ankle monitoring, let him go. He slipped out of it for about a month and a half, got caught, was put in juvenile detention, and then a week later, the judge let him back out on home monitoring again, and he slipped right out of it again. Except now he's a little wiser to it. He's leaving it at the house and just walking around doing the same thing he's been doing with his friends. But everyone's treading on water and walking on glass because they don't want to offend anybody, any of the parents. I'm retired law enforcement, but, you know, now as a pastor, it's a little different where we're trying to get things together where we know what we have to do, we know the legalities of things, and we're on the same page with that. But the child himself being 15 and being arrested multiple times and just not caring, fighting with the police even, there's just no boundaries.
This is Intentional Living with your host, Dr. Randy Carlson. Intentional Living is furnished by Parent Talk Incorporated and is made possible by the generous support of our listeners. This program is not a substitute for professional counseling, medical, financial, or legal advice. Intentional Living is not intended to be therapy by radio. We are Intentional Living, and we'll be right back.
When you rescue your children from life lessons that they need to learn, you are weakening them. Hi, I'm Dr. Randy Carlson with an Intentional Living Minute. See, muscles are strengthened by use, not by inaction. So when your kids fall down, you can help them get back up, but don't jump in and do everything for them, because failure isn't final. Kids learn from falling down and getting back up. Not only little ones, but sometimes young adults as well. There's a passage in Romans chapter 5 where Paul says, "We gladly suffer because we know that suffering helps us to endure, and endurance builds character, which gives us a hope that will never disappoint us." All of this happens because God has given us the Holy Spirit who fills our hearts with His love. That's a powerful passage. Let your kids fail. Help them back up. When you do, that's intentional living.
Find out more about freedom from hijacked emotions at theintentionallife.com/book.
I just wanted to share a story today about my daughter who was so upset because she felt like nobody at school liked her. And I know that there's so much going on with the kids today that maybe this will help one parent. And so after praying about it, I sat her down and I said, "Okay, do you want to be the most popular girl in school?" Well, of course, junior high. She said, "Yes." And I said, "All right, here's what you're going to do. Every day you find someone different to give a compliment to. I like your shoes, great hair, whatever. And you have to come home and tell me all about it." The tears stopped after just a couple of days. She started really getting involved with other people. She got out of herself. And she became one of the most popular girls in school, homecoming queen, and she's now teaching in a Christian school. So life is wonderful.
Yeah, sounds like it. Thank you, Debbie. You know, that's true. If we can teach our kids to get outside of themselves, no more selfies. No more selfies. I mean, just that word. I mean, is that biblical? Selfies? Hello. I mean, you think about it. We want to Others, that's what we should start. We should start a whole website called Others, with the emphasis on others, teaching our kids to get involved in the life of others, caring about others, loving others, providing for others. That is old-fashioned. Yeah, I'll tell you what, it should be new-fashioned, because that's how we find strength. That's where we find identity. There's where we feel good about ourselves. That's a reality. All right. Thank you, Debbie. Appreciate it. Here's another comment coming in from a listener here in the country somewhere. Take a listen.
My name is Eileen. I just wanted to make a comment on parenting. I found a lot of times if I could help the kids see that they were role models, it helped them. One example was, I was adamant that my boys would take their hats off when they walked into a building. And we walked into the mall one day, and I said to the boys, "Hey, your hat." And they said, "But everybody's got their hats on." And I turned to them and I said, "So you'll be the teachers today." And it seemed to just make them realize that, hey, they had something to give to the other people around them too. And it made them feel good, and they owned it then. From then on, I never really had to remind them again. It was something that they took on an ownership of.
Now, you talk about old-fashioned. There it is, teaching our kids manners. Taking your hat off, you know, maybe church, but taking them off whenever you go into a building. You know, I think when we teach our sons and daughters respect, manners, that's something that's needed. It's been lost in our culture over the last 30 years or so, for sure. This is a really difficult question, and many of you may relate to this. You have a young person in your family, a teenager, and they're getting emotionally involved with another person, but they're much older. And the age difference when you're 17 or 22 is huge. Not so much when you're 30 and, you know, 35, but there's a big difference between being 17 and 22. So take a listen to this question.
Hi, Dr. Randy. This is Jessica, and I'm calling from Michigan. And I had a question regarding my 17-year-old daughter. She is wanting to date a 22-year-old man. He does come from a Christian home. And we have been asking both of them to wait until she's 18 and out of high school to further any type of relationship. Unfortunately, we're getting a lot of kickback from both of them and also his family. They don't seem to have a problem with it. We're really, really having, we don't want to hurt anybody. We don't want to hurt our daughter. We don't want to force her to have a not, you know, have any type of friendship with him. But we just don't know what to do at this point.
Yeah, I hear you. But listen, you only get one shot at this thing of raising your 17-year-old, and you don't want to look back when she's 25 and maybe made a huge mistake and say, "I should have or could have." You need to be honest and tell the truth. Now, she's 17. She's going to do what she wants. I mean, let's just be honest. She's 17. But I will say this. If that 22-year-old man has any quality and character in his life, and the parents of the 17-year-old say, "Son, would you wait until you're 18, until my daughter, our daughter's 18, and he has that kind of character, that would say something to you as a parent. But if he's blowing you off and those parents are blowing you off, I think that's a reasonable point to bring up to your daughter. I'd say, listen, I like the young man, I like the family, but the fact that he would not respect our wishes, he wouldn't respect our wishes, that says something to us. What does it say to you? What does it say to you that he's not willing to wait to pursue a relationship for another 6 months or the rest of the year or whatever it is in a reasonable way? And you put the ball back in her court, as it were, and let her think about it. You will lose big time, Becky, if you criticize this young man beyond just pointing out your concern about disrespect for you. Because that really is disrespectful, in my view, including the adult parents. Come on, parents. If you've got your 22-year-old son and the parents of the 17-year-old say, "Please wait," it seems like they could come alongside their son and say, "Listen, if you want a quality relationship, be a quality person in terms of your relationship with that young lady. Got a whole lifetime ahead of you." Some of you may disagree with that. Love your comments on our storyline, 888-888-1717. Now, 5-year difference, that's not such a big deal, but there's a bigger deal between 17 and 22, as I said, than 30 and 35. The years don't matter as much, but there's a lot of changes going on in a person's life between 17 and 22, and including that young man between 22 and 27. The next 4 or 5 years, a lot of changes going on. All right, we're talking about teenagers, hearing from teen parents, or parents of teens, rather, who are sharing stories with us. We'd love to hear from you as well on our storyline at 888-888-1717. Let's, we got a single mom, Becky, who wants to ask a question. Go right ahead.
I have two teenagers, 13 and 16, and they are both boys. I'm a single mother. They do not see their fathers. I know that I'm a Christian. I was raised a Christian, and I'm trying to start walking with the Lord again. And I just want to know how to make this interesting for the children where they do know Christ and we do pray, but now I'm wanting to definitely be intentional with this in my life and theirs, and have them start doing devotions and stuff with me every day. And I just want to know how to get them more interested in that.
Well, I don't know how you get them more interested, but I think setting a routine is important. And I love the fact that you're not saying, how do I get them into church and get them off the church? Like, I'm going to make them responsible for the spiritual training of my children. That begins in the home. That's our responsibility to do that. And so it could be, hey, listen, whenever we're sitting together and having dinner, if families still do that, I know they don't do that as much, but if you're sitting down with the boys and you're going to have dinner together, before you do, say, hey, I'd like to just read a little scripture, pray, and just talk a little bit about what God's doing in your life and their life, and make it a habit, make it a routine. Bring God to the center of your home in terms of your speech and what you say and how you communicate. And let the interest grow, because listen, we're not the Holy Spirit for our kids. Let the Holy Spirit do His work in the lives of those young boys. All right, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have a young man who's just out of his teens, who's looking over his shoulder and wants to talk to you all as teens, okay? We'll get to that in a minute. We're never as vulnerable in our life as when we choose to forgive our spouse, because we're laying wide open at that point. I mean, they can choose to hurt us again, and maybe you've been down that path, hurt many times. It's a really difficult thing to do, but I think of the passage in Ephesians 4 where we're told to be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. Forgiveness is one of those, I don't know, absolute foundational ingredients to have an intentional marriage. I know it's hard. There's got to be boundaries and accountability along the way. I understand that. But without forgiveness, marriage really doesn't work.
This is Nathaniel. Although I'm not a parent, I'm just out of my adolescent stage into the young adult stage, and I just thought it would be influential if I gave a tip towards teens. And so I wanted to share. One thing that was beneficial to me was understanding that I need to frame whatever my parents are telling me, that I need to not try and tell myself a story behind what they're saying. For instance, when somebody or a parent says, why did you do this? Or can you explain why you made this decision? Oftentimes, as teens, we tell ourselves a story and we think that they're calling us deceitful or dishonest or irresponsible, and that's not their intention. God's given them the power to give that insight or give that response to us to help us and guide us. For our ability to be able to frame that information or to frame that question and first understand, you know, why they're asking it, we have to put their perspective in mind of being a parent, a loving parent, a kind parent. Above all else, frame those things towards what Christ would have you do, and make sure that you're weighing their opinions, their questions, their comments in a way that you're not telling yourself a story and running down a rabbit hole. Thank you so much. Be blessed.
Now, there's a quality young man, ladies. Thank you, Nathaniel. Young, what, 20, 21-year-old who's got his head screwed on straight can reflect and give advice to those coming up behind him. That's cool. We've been hearing from parents from all over the country who've been sharing questions and comments, and One of them came from Judy, and I wanted to share this with you because Judy is going to be talking about her teens that want to, the teen boys that want to pierce their ears. Now, this used to be a big, huge deal many years ago, more so than it is today. Tattoos and piercing, I mean, both of those. And yet, Judy's concerned about this, and she and her husband want to know how to approach this with her teens, and they had a unique approach to it. I'd love to hear what you think about this. Take a listen.
Hi, Dr. Randy. This is Judy from Iowa, and I have some tips that I learned with raising our kids. My son came home one day from high school and announced that he was going to get his ear pierced. And we are military family, but my husband had just retired from the military. And we found that saying no, especially to me, is like saying sick 'em to a dog. So we very seldom say no. My husband said, good idea. I can get my ear pierced too, and we'll have matching earrings because you have to buy them in a set. And I said, whoa, I could get my ears pierced and we could all wear the same earrings. Oh, won't this be fun? We obviously never heard another word about piercing his ears. And the other thing is, he would, about 13 or so, he didn't do touch, and I wasn't going to not touch him. He would sit on the couch in front of the TV, put his legs up so that nobody else could sit on the couch either. I simply picked up his pant legs right at the ankle. I just picked him up and slid in under him and put him back down on my lap. And then I rubbed his feet. And this was not something that was habitual in our family to rub feet. But that boy, he didn't mind that. And he let me rub his feet. But that kept me in physical touch with him. So I just would kind of try to think outside the box.
You sure did, Judy. Listen, your son got a foot rub, but no ear piercing. All right. Certainly, you know, it's interesting over years how things have changed with all that. Hey, talking about teens, raising teens today, here's a mom, and I think the comment question she refers to here, and I want you to listen because the audio is not real clear, but I want you to listen to her because when she left this for me, she was hurting. She's struggling. And I think many of you can relate to this disrespect that can go on between a parent and a child to a parent. And how to respond to it. Just take a moment and listen.
My son, he's 18 years old. He just graduated. And he does work, you know, at a job that pays well. And he helps us with the bills and stuff. But he's getting pretty disrespectful with us when we do ask him about his day. He, you know, kind of short-tempered. Because I understand he doesn't work a lot of hours from 10 to like 10. And he's just getting grouchy. Being 18 years old, I don't know how to discipline that.
Yeah. Well, he's an adult now. I think you would respond to him like you would any other adult. If he's being disrespectful to you, it's not something you should tolerate. The question is, are there things that you do provide for him? You know, you put the meals together. It sounds like he's helping out, but is he driving the company car, the house, your car? Is he eating the food out of the refrigerator and so on? And maybe when he comes and asks you for something, I don't know what it would be. Can I use the car tonight, or I'm going out, or whatever? Or do you have some extra money for this? What, you know, the stuff that he's going to want you and expect you to still do, even though he's 18, but he wants to be like an adult and says, leave me alone. It's okay to say to him, you know, son, I don't feel like that tonight. Frankly, you've been treating me with a lot of disrespect, and that really hurts me. So maybe next time, but not now. I think that holding our kids accountable, not only when they're 18, but when they're 8, to their behavior. We call it active respect here at Intentional Living. Active respect means I love you so much so that I'm willing to hold you accountable when you're disrespectful. Because if I don't do it in the home, you're going to treat some lady that way. Maybe your future wife, you're going to treat with disrespect. And so I say to mom, listen, don't let your sons treat you with disrespect, because you know what? They'll think that's okay. And it's not going to happen when they get married, or will, and they're not going to allow it to happen there. So that's a great reminder. All right, we got another tip coming in from Celeste. Take a listen.
I am the mother of 4 sons, 2 of whom are teenagers, and 2 have recently left the teen years. I think what has helped us the most is, for me, whenever things begin to get heated, praying and asking the Lord to show me His heart in the matter. And He always, always, always answers that prayer. It has never failed. He gives me a new way of seeing the things and whatever the situation is that we're dealing with. And it always softens my heart towards my child. Also, a willingness to apologize when I've blown it. And probably one of the most important things is, even when things have escalated, taking some time out and just reminding my son that as we're working through this, remember, nothing will change my love for you. I always want your best, and even if I mess up, just know that my intentions are always for your highest good.
And that is intentional living, you know. Today we've heard from people all around the country, men and women, parents, single moms and dads, those in the trenches, those with success stories, and those that are hurting, struggling. We're all in this together. And so we say to parents and grandparents today who are raising grandchildren or your children through these teen years, just remember the lessons I think that have come through today is be consistent. Be consistent. If you're married or mom and dad even not together, try to be on the same page as much as you possibly can with the same values and holding your kids accountable. Help your children see that there's a hope and a future, that there's a bright days ahead, because our kids today, come on now, our kids today are facing discouragement, depression, suicide, all sorts of problems. And make your home a place that's safe for them emotionally and physically and otherwise, that they know they can come and be who they are, be real with you and talk to you. And at the same time that you reflect the love of Christ through your words and your attitude. All right, you want to add some thoughts to that? Love to hear you. Maybe you have a comment on something you've heard today, agree or disagree. Share with us on our storyline at 888-888-1717. Hope you have a great weekend. I want to say on behalf of Jennifer and Gino and our senior producer, Stephen, thank you for being a part of Intentional Living. Facebook friends, thank you for joining with us. And please share this with some others, right? You can take this and share it. You know, parents of teens that might find some encouragement from this today. I hope you'll do that. That's one thing you can do to be intentional. So for all of us, have a great weekend. God bless you. I'm Dr. Randy. We'll see you next time.